Well, good morning, brothers and sisters. This would be our last fellowship in this series, the fall of this year. And as always, I'm very, it's always a pleasure to be with you. I hope that this series of talks, you know, over these past few months have been helpful. But the burden within me is still that the Lord would have a breakthrough separately in or individually in each one of us, and then together or collectively in the churches here in NorCal. I was talking to some brothers while we were praying before this time, and said that shepherding is not a doctrine. Shepherding is not even a so-called just a truth. Shepherding is a work. Shepherding is a service. Shepherding is a divine human activity. I am very, very burdened that, you know, after these kind of talks and so on, that we would not just be impressed and touched or moved, but which we need to be all those things, but that we would be spurred into action to do something, you see, brothers and sisters, today, actually, God's work in our lives, God's work according to his economy, that is, God's work to work himself or to wrought himself into us, to build himself into us and us into him. It is mainly carried out not by what us just sitting there, you know, reading the Bible or just praying. It does not happen that way. It happens in our daily lives, in our activities, in our doings, in our work, whether it is, you know, just human life or in our Christian life, in our church life, while we are doing things, while we're serving, while we are, you know, being active. It is in those times that certain special circumstances or instances would be prepared by the Lord or arranged by the Lord or raised up by the Lord in his sovereignty for him to do some more work of his economy in us. Do you follow me? So you just sit there and or listen to the messages and you just sit there like that. God does not work that way. We live. We carry on. We do things. We serve the Lord. We get ourselves engaged in all kinds of things. Of course, what we're talking about here is in the realm of the church life, you know, of the body life and the for the building up of the Lord's body. And so as we do those things, the Lord works. And just this last few days, I am reading a message by Brother Nee, and he said this, that today in the bridge of time, you know, that is where we're in today, in time, God is doing a work of perfecting us or training us or working himself into us. And this work today in the context of our service, in the context of our learning to serve the Lord, is what? Is a training season, a very long training season that is in our lifetime today until we are no longer, until the Lord comes back. We are in a process of being trained and perfected in his life. We are here surely in this bridge of time, growing in life, struggling and striving to be matured. We're here while it's day, here doing our best to serve the Lord, to carry out his purpose. And while we are doing that, God is working in us to perfect us, to remodel us, to transform us, to renew us, to all round make us more and more useful in his hands. And so whether it is in the life side or in the service side, and so Brother Nee said that actually he is preparing us for the coming age and even the eternal age. You know what I mean by that? That means today it's an age of training only. This is an age of us being perfected, being worked on, being growing and being transformed and so on. All of this so that in the next age, we can, quote, quote, officially, in a much more improved way, in a fuller way, and may I say in a almost a perfected way, we can serve the Lord in his kingdom. In that day, we will be co-kings with Christ. We will be the priests of God, the heavenly priests of God, and we will be here. If we are those who overcome, if we are those who are mature, if we are those who are perfected, if we are the real overcomers, we will be ready then to join him in his kingdom on this earth to take the lead in serving him. Now, logically, if in this age we didn't do that, we didn't grow. We're not matured. We didn't learn the lessons. We have never been dealt with. We're still, not so much in the reality of the new creation. Do you think in the coming kingdom, boom, suddenly you are all qualified? That it's not logical. It's not logical. So our brother said that this time is God's way of training and perfecting us so that in the next age we can serve him. Look, even in the parables of the Lord, in Matthew 25 and similar parables in other of the Gospels, those who have been given certain talents and were faithful to exercise and use them to gain a profit for him, the Lord would say, well done, right? Good and faithful servant. Of course, he'd say, what? Come into my joy. Well, that is his kingdom. But elsewhere, he says, what? Because you are faithful in a few things, I will now entrust more things to you. I will give you cities to rule. Do you remember that? Now tell me, if today you don't rule in little things, do you think the Lord will really give you a city to rule? Are you ready? No, that's a joke. So today, the massive proportion, percentage of genuine believers of Christ will not be able to rule with the Lord, will not be able to be useful to the Lord in his kingdom, because in this age and time, they missed it. They missed this opportunity to learn while they work, to be touched, to be changed, to be remodeled. I use the word that's in Titus, be improved, to be perfected in so many ways. Of course, all these are in the realm of life. And so as we do things, as we are serving today in the church, and so the Lord will say at the end, well done today. Now come into my joy, come into my kingdom. Now you are ready to really serve. When the kingdom of the earth, the world, will become the kingdom of his Christ, the Lord will need these priests, these co-kings, to serve him. And not only so, Watchman, he said that even at the end of the Bible, in the new heaven and the new earth and the new Jerusalem, it says his slaves will serve him. What are we doing in eternity? What do you think? We're going to, is that a resort we will be in and just, we play golf there? What are we going to do in eternity? Well, the answer is there. His slaves will serve him in the temple, which is the Lamb, to serve God. And to worship him. And so if we are not trained in this age or next age, we cannot serve him then. But we know all of God's elect, redeemed elect, will by then be transformed and renewed and glorified and so forth. But not only on the life side, but also on the service side, they would have learned how to serve the Lord. They would be prepared. They would be qualified to serve the Lord in the proper way. So we are today even being trained for eternity, in a sense. So my brothers and sisters, you look at things in this way, you will treasure every moment in this life, in this bridge of time that we're still on. While we are still here, we would not be those who are slothful, right? Do not be slothful, but be burning in spirit, serving the Lord as a slave. Because for eternity, we will still be, one of our statuses is still be a slave of God, to serve him. And so, talking about shepherding, this song that I wrote that we've been singing, the whole notion, the whole burden there is that God, or Christ himself, is the shepherd of Jehovah. He is the shepherd of God. He is the embodiment of the triune God, who is a shepherd. The triune God is simply a shepherd. And Christ, as the embodiment of God, was the one determined in eternity past to what? That he would come out of eternity into time, right? On, and to come to this earth to be what? To be a shepherd. To be a shepherd. And in his case, primarily a shepherd of Israel, not so much the shepherd of the Gentiles, that will be left for others to do. I'm talking about Jesus in the flesh, God in the flesh. So he would come here to do that. You know, you read Zechariah, there he was, condemning, not only condemning, he said, I will destroy three shepherds. Do you remember that? Three shepherds, you know who they are? They are the elders, they are the chief priests, they are the scribes. It turns out that these folks were given to Israel or raised up in Israel, not just to teach people the law and do all these kind of things, but primarily to shepherd God's flock in the Old Testament, Israel. And not only did they fail to do this completely, and for that reason, look, when the Lord came, okay, and when the Lord started to carry out his ministry, the first thing he saw was the need of shepherding. You remember he started going to the cities and towns and villages and teaching in the synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom. He healed the sick and so on. And more than one time, again and again, it says he, this shepherd, this heavenly shepherd, this triune God as the shepherd in the flesh, sent specifically to his people, Israel. And it always says he see the crowds. He look at the crowds. And he was, this is a phrase that is used repeatedly, and he was moved with compassion for them. Because at this time, he was not just God, the divine one. He is now a man, the human one. And this God-man now today, with the attributes and heart of God, and now even acquiring the virtues and feeling of a man, this God-man today is just looking just at the crowds of these Israelites all around him, was moved with compassion. Compassion means great sympathy. Compassion means kind-heartedness. Compassion means mercy, am I right? Empathy. And he was moved with compassion for them, for their situation. It says because they were, number one, harassed. They were harassed. And number two, they were cast away. And here's the line, like sheep not having a shepherd. Like sheep not having a shepherd. Now, if you don't have the eyes of Christ Jesus, you would not say, oh, it's just a bunch of people. They're not doing so well. They're having a little hard time. But the Lord saw a flock, a scattered flock of sheep, of lambs that are being harassed and that are being wandering without a home. They are like sheep not having a shepherd. So one sentence described the condition of Israel at the time when the Lord was on the earth. It was a flock. It was a scattered flock without a shepherd. And so he said, is prophesying the Old Testament again and again, he will come as a shepherd of Israel. you can go read these footnotes. You know, harass means a sheep being skinned and by a cruel shepherd. The shepherd not only didn't care for his own sheep, they a cruel shepherd that hurt the sheep, that skinned the sheep, that caused the sheep to suffer pain, harassed, and cast away means they are just totally abandoned by these evil shepherds, and they all got into a very distressful situation, homeless, wandering, helpless, from place to place. This was described in the Old Testament prophets especially. And when the Lord came, the same thing. That is a extremely pitiful situation of Israel, and full of affliction, full of anguish. I mean, these Israel people, under whose hands? Under the hands of the shepherds, under the hands of those who should be taking care of them. So that's why God said, these are evil people. I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to kill them. These chief priests and scribes and so on. And look, that is exactly what happened when the Lord came to this earth. They challenged the Lord. The Lord was going around to shepherd his own. And these evil, fake shepherds will actually be in the Lord's way, giving the Lord, the real shepherd, a hard time, and laying down the law on them, hurting them. That's the situation. That's the situation. And so, brothers and sisters, the Lord at that time said what? At least in this one instance, the Lord say, look, the harvest is great. The workers are few. Then he say, beseech, you know, the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest. Yes, he begin to use a different parable of harvesting. That's true. But if you look before that, you will see that the feeling of the Lord within is a shepherd's feeling. And so when he say, we need more workers, right? We need more workers to be thrusted out into the harvest. Yes, on the one hand, it is to reap that harvest. But wouldn't you say it is also accurate to say that he needs more shepherds, co-shepherds, shepherds along with him? So all these disciples that he had gathered, the 12 of them, he gave them authority to, you know, cast out the unclean spirits and heal the sicknesses and so on. Yes, the Lord did that. The Lord did that. But actually, he is sending them out as the shepherds to gather his flock, to heal his flock, his sheep, to bring them to himself as the pasture, to help them to be saved and enter into the kingdom of the heavens. So, brothers and sisters, today, look at this earth, look at the whole situation, look at all of God's people. I mean, millions and millions of them scattered, with no food to eat, suffering, sick, dying, and so on. And even just look at ourselves in the Lord's recovery, in the church life, where we are. Where are the shepherds? Where are the shepherds? So Peter, let's now talk a little bit about our brother Peter. He's not the first pope by a long stretch. He was a man as weak as we are, as natural as we are. He just turned out to be more impetuous and bold and audacious and quick and strong to represent us. Actually, we're all Peters. We're all the same. And so the Lord came to him in Luke 5 and got into the boat and spoke something, and after that told these fishermen to cast the net here, and instantly they caught a lot of fish, and and at that time, Peter took the lead, and he fell down on his knees at the Lord's knees and say, "Lord, I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner." And the Lord said, "What? Follow me. I will make you fishers of men." Right? Fishers of men. This is the first calling. And then instantly they left their occupation, they left everything to go with, to follow the Lord, talk about being perfected, talk about being trained. They have now become disciples. They are under the discipleship of the chief shepherd of Israel. And these are all Jews, so they are all following the Lord, seeing what he's doing, learning from him, and eventually sent out by him to what? To fish men. But that is the beginning. We need to jump over all of Peter's history, which is a very rich one. Actually, I have a hymn on that. That hymn is called, "Do You Love Me More Than These?" That's the name of the hymn. You may be able to find it in the hymnal.net. That is a very, very brief story of Peter. Following the Lord, all this is while he was following the Lord. He loved the Lord. He followed the Lord. He was working for the Lord and so on. And it was while he was doing that, I'm coming back to my first point in the beginning, while he was doing these things, the Lord used all kinds of instances and circumstances to expose him. His natural strength, his self-confidence, his pride, his ambition, all of that, time after time after time, our dear brother Peter was sacrificed and used as a pattern, as a case for us to learn the same lessons. Well, but fast forward to the end, at the very end, he denied the Lord three times. Can you believe it? And not only that, after the Lord died and resurrected, and the Lord wanted to train them to know his invisible presence, and so he was not with them all the time, visibly. And then he took the lead again and say, "I go fishing." Okay, so here he is. He denied the Lord before the Lord was crucified, and after the Lord resurrected, he backslid to his occupation. He left his walk by faith and went back to fish. And lo and behold, he can fish, just like when the Lord called him the first time. This is the Lord's calling him the last time. The Lord did the same miracle. I think the Lord was basically reminding him what happened in the beginning. The miracle this time to catch fish, to show him to take the way of faith, to trust in the Lord, that there will be food to eat, so that the Lord even prepared the fish and bread on the shore without using what they just caught. What a miracle. Two bookends of the same miracles. One is the first calling. One is the last calling of Peter. And in this calling, he also said, "Follow me." But he said something more. When you're young, you go wherever you want. Even after the first calling, Peter was still free. He was still young. He go wherever he wanted. But he said, "No, when you get old, someone will take you to where you don't want to go," anticipating his martyrdom. And actually, there was a middle call. As I'm speaking here, I'm remembering, there's a middle call. That call is in Matthew 16, after he saw and he answered so rightly, so boldly, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Then immediately, using his natural heart and love for the Lord, when the Lord said, "I have to go to Jerusalem to die there," he said, no, that cannot happen to you. That cannot happen to you. You know what the Lord said to him? Satan. Peter's kind heart and love for the Lord was satanic. His opinion, he didn't have God's thoughts. He didn't have God's mind. God's mind is that Jesus must die and be resurrected. But he was just exercising his human, natural passion for the Lord. And so he became Satan. "Get behind me." And the Lord didn't just stop there. The Lord talked about following him again. And I believe very much for Peter. If anyone who would follow me, he would take up his cross, deny his soul, and follow me. So that whole 3 years and something of Peter's following the Lord, I mean, don't you agree with me? It's just a training, right? A perfecting to prepare him for the day of Pentecost. Now, Peter later on failed another time in the presence of Paul in Antioch when he did not go along with the gospel of the truth, right? And remove himself from eating with the Gentiles when some from James came from Jerusalem. So he failed again. But nevertheless, by the time after the Lord charged him and commissioned him by the Sea of Tiberias, Peter was a perfected one. He was ready to carry out the Lord's commission to him and to the other apostles to take care of the church. Now, my point is this, that whereas in the first call, the Lord said, "You will be a fisher of men," but in this last call, and this last call is much more intimate, much more in detail. It's not just two words, "follow me." It's a long conversation where the Lord, as if to remind him of his thrice denial of him, of the Lord, would ask him three times, "Do you love me?" And the first time he actually said, "Do you love me more than these?" Because one time, Peter said, "I love you more than any of these. They will get stumbled, I won't get stumbled. They will run away, Lord, I'm going to lay down my life for you. I love you more than all these ones." Now the Lord said, "Do you still claim that you love me more than these ones?" Basically referring to that terrible denial. How did the Lord answer? I mean, Peter answer. He just said, "Lord, you know I love you." He dare not say, "I love you more than these." That means he was touched. He was dealt with. He lost his confidence. He's not so natural. And three times when the Lord asked him the same way, you know, the asking of the Lord each time is the word agape. Do you love me more? Do you love me, Simon? That is agape love. And each time, Peter would respond not with the agape love, just with the philo love, the intimate love, not the most noble love as agape. you just get the idea that this man is broken. This man has been touched. This man had, through failure, worked on by the Lord to prepare him for his usefulness to him in the start of the church age. Well, in this last and final call, the Lord say, shepherd, or feed my lambs, feed my sheep, and shepherd my sheep. So here is not calling Peter to be the fisher. This is calling Peter to be the shepherd. The fish is in the sea. The sheep is on the land. And God's Christ's work is to fish the lost in the world of the sea, to bring them, as these fishermen did, to the land and begin where upon land they change from a fish to a lamb or a sheep, and they are to be shepherded. This is the full, you may say, apostolic ministry. And this is our ministry today. And that what this is also the Lord's ministry. I like to say this morning, brothers and sisters, just to motivate us. And that is this: we're here burdened for shepherding, all right? Burdened for shepherding. And in the Lord's very detailed and intimate conversation with Peter to restore Peter's love to Peter, at that time must be just totally embarrassed, totally disappointed, just think it's done, it's over. You know, the Lord can fire him on the spot, and he deserved it. He was in that state of mind, probably. But no, the Lord didn't do that. The Lord say, Simon, calling him not Peter, Simon. Very, very intimate. Do you love me 3 times? Yes. Eventually, you know, Lord. You know all things. You know I love you. And each time the Lord charged, the Lord commissioned shepherd. By the way, that word lamb, feed my lamb, means little lambs in Greek. And that word sheep means not just sheep, little sheep. You know, I was told by, you know, people who knows this kind of sheep and all of this, it depends. You tell the sheep's age by the teeth. And the little lambs are those who have no teeth. That means they couldn't chew the grass, so they have to drink milk. Isn't this what Peter said in 1 Peter? As babes that would desire the milk, pure milk of the word, he was there shepherding, feeding little lambs. But the sheep, the word sheep in Greek, also refers to little sheep, not huge, big, old sheep, but little sheep, young sheep. And Peter was taught by the Lord at that time to become such a shepherd of the little lambs, then of the young sheep, let's call them young people, and then eventually shepherd the sheep, not just feed, but shepherd. That means the whole church, the churches, the flock of God, shepherd them. And so Peter, especially in the first epistle, was just speaking about this to the saints and eventually to the elders, shepherd the flock of God. Peter was a transformed man. And he was given to the shepherding ministry of Christ. That means Christ's shepherding ministry is reflected in his ministry, Peter's ministry on the earth. And that's all he did, was just shepherd, just shepherd. Well, the point I want to next bring up is this. The Lord asking the question, do you love me? Yes, I do, Lord. Okay, go shepherd, go feed. Well, what does this mean? This to me means the whole matter of shepherding, the whole shepherding is entirely a matter in the realm of love. It's fully in the realm of love. If you don't love the Lord, if you cannot answer the Lord three times that you really love him, you will not receive that charge. The Lord will not commission you. And the basis of the Lord's charge and commission to Peter, to shepherd, to feed, is love. Do you love me? Okay. Yes, I do. Go feed. Go feed. Go shepherd. Love. Dear brothers and sisters, when we talk about shepherding, it's not just an obligation. It's not just a responsibility. It's not just a duty. It's about love. It's about compassion. It's about kind-heartedness. It's about intimate concern. If you're not in this realm, you cannot shepherd. You're just doing something without a motivation, without a burden. And after a while, you won't do it. It's just some dry work that you're doing. But if you love, you'll give your whole life to shepherd. Love what? You may ask. I would say this morning, four things to love. Number one, to love the Lord. You see, when we're talking about shepherding, we have to love the Lord, brothers and sisters. We have to love the Lord so much that we will love what is on his heart, to love what he loves. Am I right? Which is his lambs, his sheep, his flock. There's nothing more the Lord loves more. So love the Lord. Love the Lord, brothers and sisters. That's the only thing that will qualify to be a real shepherd. Number two, love the church. You know, I mentioned to the brothers, this reminds me of that slave in Exodus 31 who was given the right after serving so for a period of time to be free, to be emancipated, to no longer serve as a slave. But this slave decided that he will continue. He will not take freedom. He will take slavery for the rest of his life. Why? What was the reason? I love my master, my wife, my children, and I will not go out free. So there you have it. Number one, he loved his master. So now it's not, he's not serving the master because the master purchased him and owned him, which he did, because now he's given the right to leave, but he decided to stay. Now it is no longer duty and responsibility, and because he was bought and purchased. Now it is totally a story, a matter of love. He loved the master so much that he would stay here to serve until the end of his life. And he loved his wife. And of course, that slave is a type of Christ who loved the Father and who loved the church, the wife, and who loved his children. That means the saints. And the Lord Jesus is that slave. And today we are here to be part of this Christ and the extension of this Christ, to have the same heart. So today, in the same way, we have to first love the Lord as he loved the Father. And we also have to love his church as the Lord loves the church. Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. For her, I too would my body give thy heart's desire to meet. Brothers and sisters, if you don't love the church, you will not shepherd the church. This is why, just to have a name, you're an elder, means nothing. You don't have a heart of an elder. You don't have the heart of the Lord, who laid down his life for the church, for that pearl of great price, for that treasure on the earth. He sold all. That means shed his own blood and gave up his life to obtain that treasure, to obtain the church. So we have to love the church the same way the Lord loves the church. And number three, the children, the Lord's children. And those are the saints, the brothers and sisters. Do we love the saints, this saint and that saint? Or do we just kind of look at them and criticize them and say, this one is like that, that one is like that? Sure, they're all kinds. They all have needs. They all have problems. They all have situations. They all have their dispositions. But do we love the children? And I like to add one more to this matter of love. And that is what the Lord said to this lawyer, using the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know that parable? That the priest, the Levite, all just walk by. This one is beaten to half death. The Samaritan came. It had nothing to do with the Jews, Israel, the outcasts. This Samaritan came and he was moved with compassion. That's the same word there. Move with compassion. Of course, that's the Lord, the Samaritan. Why did the Lord speak that parable? Because the lawyer was trying to test the Lord. You know, what is, the Lord asked, what is the greatest law? The Lord said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and so on and so forth. And the Lord said, and you have to love your neighbor as yourself. If you do this, it says you will have life. That's in Luke, I think. In Luke, Gospel of Luke. And so this lawyer said, well, what do you mean love your neighbor? That's when the Lord gave this story of the neighbor. Dear saints, we need to love our neighbors too. These are the unsaved. These are the people in the world. These are our neighbors in our physical neighborhoods, in our families, earthly families, amongst our friends, of the people we run into and meet. This fourfold love, brothers and sisters, has to be there. for us to really, really receive the Lord's greatest charge, the Lord's ultimate charge and final charge to this leading apostle of his. And that is to feed and to shepherd his flock. Now, brothers and sisters, I am speaking in this way not just to talk about parables and stories and things like that. I think you can sense the burden that is in my heart. Dear saints, we need a change. Our church life needs a change. We need to be reoriented. We need to be put on the eyeglasses to see what we are doing here today. While we're here still in the bridge of time, while we're serving here, the Lord has a need also today, not only in the next age, not only in eternity, he has a need today, because even for him to be able to come back, he needs the body built up, the reality of the body of Christ to exist on the earth, at least to some degree. He needs his bride prepared and adorned. He needs his church, his testimony raised up. He needs to build up the local churches, the Jerusalem from which Zion will come. The overcomers would be prepared. And we're here today. We're here today in the local churches, in the Lord's recovery, under this great, profound, and rich ministry of the age. So fortunate. But this one thing, our commission, I'm so burdened for, that there would be a revival in the recovery of the saints, the churches, rising up to fulfill this charge of the Lord, this commission of the Lord. I hope that in Northern California, again I say, that you have not just been somewhat blessed with this speaking, you know, this burden, these words in these months. I hope that you are more than touched and inspired. I hope that we will have that threefold conversation with the Lord in the most intimate way, personally. The Lord work in all of your life and mine in these last years. For some of us, 5 years, for some of us, 10, for some of us like me or others, over 50 years in the Lord, in following the Lord, even in the church life. For what? For what? As I recall all the things that happened to me, all the instances the Lord taught, the Lord exposed, the Lord dealt with, the Lord touched, it is all to perfect me and train me, just like the Lord did with Peter, right? And all of us. So that we would be brought to a point, finally to a point, that we can receive this commission. This is the greatest, ultimate commission, I would say, to the church. To fish and to shepherd. to bear fruit and bear remaining fruit. To lead, as it were, someone that God had chosen from the bronze altar of burnt offering, through the laver, through into the holy place, and through the showbread table, and through the lampstand, and through that golden incense altar, and eventually into the holiest of all, where the ark is, and even into the ark to experience the things in the ark. You know what, brothers and sisters? That's what the chief and heavenly shepherd of our souls is doing to us right now. Right now. The fact that we're in this meeting here, the fact that we're open, the fact that we're still loving the Lord and seeking Him in the church, that means that shepherd is hard at work. The Lord's ministry today, of course, is number one, in the heavens, for sure, sitting at the right hand of God, administrating the universe, administrating God's government, God's move on this earth, and so forth, which only He can do as the head and the leader, and as the King of kings and Lord of lords. But there is this other work that He is doing that is just as important, and that is the work of being our advocate above, the work of interceding for you and I, the work in the role of a shepherd, the chief one of what shepherding each and every one of us, like Psalm 23. And shepherding His church. Shepherding all of His own today. That we may grow. That we may mature. That we may pass through all manners of necessary experiences, sufferings, the shadow of the valley of death, all the way into His house. This is what the Lord is doing above in the heavenlies. But He's not doing that just above at the throne in the heavenlies. Dear saints, He is also the one indwelling us. So He is not only, Christ is not only today fulfilling His ministry in ascension, His heavenly ministry in ascension. But let me say this, today He's also correspondingly, at the same time, concurrently, fulfilling His ministry as that all-inclusive spirit in what? In inhabitation, indwelling us. So He is both up there and He's also down here. He's on the throne of grace. He's also on the throne in our spirit. This one today is that shepherd. is not only shepherding things on the whole earth, all the nations, all the situations, the world situation, but he's also shepherding his church, his flock, and each one of us, his sheep, according to God, really according to God, and according to God's economy, to bring us all the way, right, to full salvation, to build us up to be his body, and to ready us to be his bride. And that's what he's doing today. And what he is charging us to do, what he charged Peter to do, and is charging each and every one of us to do, is to correspond with him, is to reflect him, is to do the same thing as he is doing. So the song that we sing, been singing, Lord, what is that? Grant me a shepherd's heart like yours, with tenderest concerns, to feed your sheep, to nurse your lambs. Of you we will all will learn. May we be carers of men's souls, with you, chief shepherd dear, a crown of glory we'll receive the hour when you appear. I would like to ask all of us these days to take action. I'll say something in the next session, particularly about the way to start, and actually it's the way of intercession and prayer. But here I would just like to say this before we break up. I hope, brother, is it okay we break up at 11:15 and then have a 15-minute break, and we have a 30-minute second session. Is that okay? All right. So, or however minutes, I just have one thing. And that is to have a deeper conversation, like Peter had with the Lord by the Sea of Tiberias, with the Lord intimately, seriously, to revive, to renew, to declare our love for the Lord in those directions, to him, to his church, to his little ones, the saints, and towards the sinners, his chosen, the ones he had chosen, the unsaved, our love, which is at the end his love, and receive a lifelong commission from him to go and feed and shepherd these ones for whom he is filled and flooded with compassion. And not only that, with that, you will take action. Take action. I mean, look, you just lift up your eyes and look. They're all there, wandering people, hurting people, suffering ones, afflicted ones, needy ones, unsaved ones, just sinners, seekers, and saints. Find a few to care for specifically. Don't just go do something by way of duty, because that won't last. And don't give up just because someone rejects your reaching out or doesn't seem to be responsive. If you are full of love and care, you won't give up. You would rather endure. You would rather exercise much patience, because the motive is the love of a shepherd. Okay, I think I will just